relationship is challenging. Often when we're in some kind of counseling with a couple, I'll hear a man say, "You mean I have to buy roses for my wife to show her that I love her? What's with that?" When I hear that attitude, even if the person bought his wife 3 dozen roses, it would not achieve the desired effect. Why? Because it has to come from an understanding and a want-to rather than a have-to. And really, when you really break it down, it could be, yes, a lack of understanding and getting good skills in relationships, but often it's a matter of pride and about not being willing to humble themselves and submit to others. Pride is one of those issues that God is opposed to, and it's afflicted man from the beginning of creation. I can't help but think of Pharaoh when Moses came up to him and told him to let my people go, and Jehovah's commanded it. Remember Pharaoh's response? "Who is Jehovah that I should obey his voice? I do not know Jehovah, and after any even I will not let his people go." Well, God introduced himself to Pharaoh, didn't he? And he learned very quickly, and he was humbled, and his pride was taken away. See, God's opposed to pride. Naaman was another example. He was a great commander in the Syrian army. And he heard there was a prophet that could heal people. See, Naaman was a leper. And so he comes to Elisha, and he wants to know what he can do. He's thinking that he could do some noble event, you know, some odyssey, conquer something to earn his healing from leprosy. Naaman doesn't even leave the tent, but just sends a messenger out and says, "Go tell him to dip in the Jordan River 7 times. We read in the text in 2 Kings 5 that Naaman became furious. It was a pride issue. "You didn't even come out and talk to me? And aren't there better and cleaner rivers in my own hometown? And you want me to dip in this filthy Jordan River?" Finally, his servant talked him into it. He said, "Just humble yourselves and do what he says and see what happens." And it's after and only after he humbled himself enough to obey God that he was cleansed of his leprosy. And that leads us to Peter, the apostle of Jesus Christ, the one who was given the doors or the keys to the kingdom of heaven, whose name was changed from Simon to Peter, denoting that he would be a rock in the church. Peter had a pride issue too. And Peter writes about this in his older years in 1 Peter chapter 5. And I can't help but think he's writing about his life as a younger man. And we talked about it last week when we quoted the work of an eldership in chapter 5, verse 1 through 4. But there in verse 5, Peter exhorts his younger men of the church to submit themselves to their elders with all humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He's opposed to it. It's something that God fights against because the proud person will not and cannot work with God. So God works against him. There are a few things that you'll find yourself at odds with God. That you're actually going to be on the opposite side and he will be treating you like an enemy. And pride is one of them. And that's why it's something we have to talk about, because it will bring about our demise. Now, the reason I'm talking about pride is not because I think we have a pride issue here, is I want us to make sure we understand we're loving God from the heart. And pride is often the thing that gets in the way, such as it was with Peter. Because Peter was a man that 3 times denied Jesus. We understand that account and remember it. And we want to look at that. When he says God is opposed to the proud but gives grace to the humble, he learned that lesson the hard way, didn't he? Because he was a prideful man at one time in his youth, but he was humbled. And from that humility, he learned that God gives grace to those who are humble. And he learned how to maintain and nurture his relation with God. It was a position of humility and not pride. And that's really our lesson. God is opposed to the proud, But if you humble yourself, he will give you grace. Let's look at the boastfulness and broken life of Peter, and then we'll look at the restored life as he finds hope when he humbles himself. But first of all, we'll just go through some of the texts that we're familiar with, and then we'll read John chapter 21 again. But remember when Jesus was introducing the conversation to his disciples that he's going to have to suffer and die on the cross? And then we find in Matthew chapter 20, for example, in verse 22, they were asking and arguing to sit at Jesus' right hand, left hand. And he says, you don't understand the cup that you're asking to drink that I have to go through just to get there myself. And he says, you don't know what you're asking for. And are you able to drink the cup I'm about to drink? And here's their answer. They all said in unison, we are able. Is that pride or self-reliance? And then in Matthew 26 and verse 33, after Jesus telling them, they're all going to desert me and deny me, Peter said to him, and you got to listen, even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Now notice the emphasis on the word I. He's about his own self-reliance and what he's going to do. And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you, this very night before a rooster crows, you will deny me three times. And Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And the disciples said the same thing too. Now, you have to hear what he's saying. Jesus said very clearly, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Does Peter listen to the words of Jesus and submit to them? Or does he come back and say, no, that's not going to happen? He's in effect telling Jesus, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't understand who I am. Now, did he have this problem once before? In Matthew chapter 16, when Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I am? Peter said, I know who you are. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, that's right. And upon this fact, I'm going to build my church. I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. He goes on in that text in Matthew chapter 16 and goes on to tell him that the Son of Man has to be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, suffer many things, and be killed and raised on the third day. Peter takes him aside and said, Lord, this will never happen to you. Now, that's a pride issue that he knows more than what Jesus knows. And he just got done saying, you're God and I'm a man, but I know more than you know. And what did Jesus have to do? Get behind me, Satan. Because you're setting your mind on the things of the world and not the things of God. See, Peter had this affliction, and I suggest we all have it to one degree or another, and our whole life is to submit to the Lord in humility so we can have the grace that we need to succeed. Because God is opposed to the proud. But we're not done there. Another occasion in Luke chapter 22 and verse 31, we get this additional information recorded for us by the mouth of Jesus, where he says, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. That's a very interesting statement, that Satan had to get permission from God. But Satan knows that Peter is an instrumental tool in Christ's plan to preach the gospel to the whole world. In fact, he knows that Jesus is going to give him the keys to the kingdom of heaven. So Satan wants to bring Peter down. He wants to tear him up and turn him inside out and destroy his faith. But he had to get permission from God, and it sounds like God granted it. And Jesus goes on to say, but I have prayed for you. Those are probably the sweetest words to hear from our master, that he is praying for you or praying for me. He said, I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And you, once you have turned again, that means he will turn away, that you will turn again and strengthen your brothers. But Peter said to him, Lord, with you I am ready to go with you even to prison and to death. He does not listen. Even though Jesus has pulled the curtain back and revealed about conversations in heaven, about what's happening in his life, he said, no, not happening to me. I'll stand. I'll even go to jail for you. In chapter 13 of the Gospel of John, where Jesus is talking about where he's going to place and they can't follow, Peter comes back and says, Lord, why can't I follow you right now? I will lay down my life for you. Jesus answered, will you lay your life down for me? Truly I say to you, a rooster will not crow until you deny me three times. And finally, in Mark 14, the last text I'd share with you, when Jesus is promising Peter that he's going to deny him, Peter doesn't give up. Jesus said to him, verse 30, truly I say to you, this very night before the rooster crows, you yourself will deny me three times. But Peter kept insisting. He just wasn't going to let up. Said, nope, 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 it's not going to happen. You can see that the little child in him just plugging his ears. No, 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 I will die. I will not deny. He says, even if I have to die with you, I will not die, deny you. Now, we have to ask the question, and it's a fair question. What would you have had Peter say differently? Because if you have a pride problem, I'm suggesting, you're saying, well, he should have said something else. No, he needs to make statements of commitment, doesn't he? He needs to voice faithfulness. I will be faithful to you. So it's not so much the problem that he's promising faithfulness, but what we're hearing in is all this I. It's all about himself, what he's going to do, and he's not listening to Jesus himself. And he's closing his mind and not willing to humble himself to his Lord. And so what could he have said? Rather than being self-reliant, I'm going to do this. I don't care if anyone else will. I'll be faithful to you. Perhaps he could have said this, Lord, by God's grace and your strength, I will be faithful to you and I'll even die with you. Is that a little more humble? Lord, I know that I'm a weak man. And I know that in the time of fearful events like this, that many men stronger than me have failed you. But by your grace and your strength, I'll stay faithful. That's my will. Now that's what God wants to hear from us. Yes, voices of commitment that I'll be faithful, but clothed with humility, that I'm not going to make it by my own accord and my own strength, because it's not going to happen. We're dealing with spiritual powers and the weakness of man that, well, no man's been able to conquer. And it took Jesus to conquer it ourselves for us. And so we know then that because of his unwillingness to listen to Jesus, that he ended up with a broken life. And so let us look at Matthew chapter 27. I want you to look there with me and read some of this event. And again, we're familiar with it, but you just have to understand it in the context we've just spoken. Matthew 26, excuse me, beginning in verse 69. This account is written in the other Gospels, but we'll just pick this one. That Jesus has been led away after the event in the garden where Jesus is arrested. Peter cuts off a soldier's ear and Jesus says, put your sword away. You don't know what you're doing. And Peter's confused, but he's following him from a distance. He's staying close enough to see what happens to Jesus, but not close enough to be identified with him. He's following him from a distance. And it's at this time that he gets perhaps a little too close or stays too long, and people recognize who he is. Verse 69, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a certain servant girl came to him and said, you too were with Jesus, the Galilean. He goes, oh, his cover's been blown. And he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you're talking about. a little while, he'd gone out the gateway, and another servant girl, we're talking about maidens that are threatening, these girls in the community that in their society had a lesser position than anyone else, and yet he's intimidated just by the fact that this young girl, this servant girl, would identify him as being a disciple of Christ. Another girl saw him and said to those who were with him, this man, pointing to Peter, he was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied it with an oath. Now, you'll know that some of the other texts say that he swore it with an oath or a curse. The word really means an oath. It's invoking the name of a higher power to swear that what you're saying is true. He didn't use bad language. He didn't curse it like we think of cursing. But he took an oath and he said, by the name perhaps of Jehovah himself, I do not know this man. Now, he didn't deny being a disciple. He denied even knowing him. You couldn't go farther in denial than that. In verse 73, a little later, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, surely you are two or one of them, for the way you talk gives you away. Then he began to curse and swear. That word swear in the original language is the idea of swearing like on a Bible. It's taking an oath. I do not know the man. And what happens immediately? The cock crows. Peter immediately remembers the words of Jesus. The ones he said to Jesus, no, that's not going to happen. You don't know what you're talking about. Not me. Everyone else, not me. I'm your faithful follower. Immediately, he remembers the words of Jesus, before a cock crows, you'll deny me three times. And here's the words. He went out and wept bitterly. At this time, Peter is finally humbled. At this time, Peter is a broken man. When he says he wept bitterly, this is a weeping and a remorse and a sorrow that few people experience from the word that is used here. It's the lowest of times. It's very similar to Judas, who felt remorse, but he couldn't handle it because of his own self-righteousness. He hung himself or self. But Peter was a different person. He did believe in who Jesus was, but he's still a broken man. And here's this open man crying and wailing about what he's done. He denied his Lord and his Master. I was talking with Brandon and Katie said something. I thought she said one thing, and she actually said another, but she said, growth is awkward. It's not what she said, but that's what I'm going to attribute it to her mouth, because it's quite a statement. Growth is awkward. When you watch someone doing martial arts, at first when they start doing things, does it look awkward? Watching little William walk the first time, was that awkward? But is it necessary? And you have to fall on your face sometimes to learn how to walk. Spiritual growth is awkward. It's messy. There are those low times when we mess up miserably, but those are the times we learn the most. See, growth is awkward. It's messy. This is a messy, troubling time for Peter in his life. Now, we know what happens between this and the appearance we're going to read about in John chapter 20. But might as well just turn your Bibles there. Jesus is crucified on the cross. For 2 days, there's nothing. And then the reports come that Jesus has risen from the dead. Peter and John hears about it. John takes off. And Peter's right behind him. John outraces him, but stops at the entrance to the tomb. But Peter is so excited, he runs right in the tomb and finds out Jesus is gone. Jesus appears to the 12, says, peace be with you. And then after a while, we find in John chapter 21 that Peter says, I'm going fishing. Because he was a fisherman. That's what he knew how to do. And he goes back to his hometown, and we study this in the book of John when we just finished on Sunday morning, but you have to consider what happens here once again. While he's fishing, Jesus appears to him, and we know that they've been fishing all night, and they haven't caught nothing, and they didn't know who necessarily the man was on the shore, and he said, put your nets down on the right side. They said, okay, and they do it, and they caught this great catch of fish. And Peter says immediately, "It's the Lord." He throws himself in the water because he's not going to wait for the boat to get to shore. He's got to come see his Lord. And it's this time that we have a restoration in its fullest sense of Christ's relationship with Peter. Because there's no recording of anything that Jesus said to him, like, "Hey, why'd you deny me? I told you I was right." This is the only communication we have that even refer back to that event. But we're going to see a humble man getting grace. And it's interesting because Jesus, not one time in this occasion does he condemn them, or Peter. He doesn't judge him. And in fact, he doesn't even bring up the denial itself. But obviously, he refers to it. So we find in our text, in verse 15, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, son of John, "Do you love me?" Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, "Do you love me more than these?" And Peter said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Tend my sheep." And then a little while later, said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now, he uses the word for agape, the highest form of love. And Peter comes back and says, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." He used the word phileo. It's a more brotherly love. And he said, "Well, shepherd my sheep." Now, the third time is when Peter is just grieved because Jesus asked him the third time, paralleling the three times that he denied him. It's obvious the relationship here. So he said to him the third time in verse 17, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he uses the word phileo, the same answer that Peter's been given. And it says in our text, Peter was grieved because the Lord had said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know I love you." And he said, "Feed my sheep." Now, I want you to see the connection. Did Jesus try to tell Peter at one time, "I know all things, you're going to deny me? I know Satan has tried to sift you, he's going to sift you. It's going to be hard, and I'm praying for you that you don't fall altogether." And Peter was not listening to the words of Jesus, was he? He was not listening to what the Lord knew to be true, being God. He said, "No, Lord, that's not going to happen. You don't know what you're talking about." In his pridefulness, he was not willing to submit to what Jesus said to prepare himself. He's a changed man now, isn't he? Is there a humility here now that we see after he's broken? That he, with Jesus there, he says, "Lord, you know all things." I want you to think about those words. He doesn't say, "Yeah, I love you, and I'll stay faithful to you." No, he says, "Lord, you know all things. Lord, you know my heart. You know, deep down in there, I blew it. I was scared, I was tempted, and I let you down. But you know way down there, I love you. You know it." And he said it three times, "You know all things." And that's why he's grieved, because he knows the Lord knows. Because he's learned that lesson. When the Lord says something, it's true, and it does do no good to argue with him. Because he knows. And Peter knows that he knows. But he knows that the Lord is making a point by asking him three times. The second thing we learn is Jesus says, "I don't want obedience just for obedience' sake. I don't want statements of faithfulness just for faithfulness' sake. I don't want people swearing allegiance for pride's sake, because I'm not going to be like others. I'm going to rise above. I want love. I want you to love me more than anything. I want you to love me with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, your very being. Because when you love me, then I know you're going to obey me. Then I know you're going to listen to me. Then I know you're going to do what I ask unquestionably, because you know that I know all things." There won't be any more arguments. Why do I have to do this? There won't be none of that. And that's what Jesus is looking for. Not just giving someone roses because you're trying to prove to them you love them, but you're doing it from your heart. And if it's not roses, it's something else because you love that person more than anything. And I know my challenges in my life as a Christian is because I didn't love Jesus enough. Or I love things on this earth more than I loved him. And that's why Jesus asks the question, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than anybody or anything? And if you do, I know you'll follow me. And that kind of humility, I'll grace and I'll bless. And he did with Peter. He preached the gospel and 3,000 souls came to the Lord the very first day as he opened the doors of the kingdom. Again, 4,000 on the second day. Peter was imprisoned. He said powerful things when they were told under the threat of beating, imprisonment, and even death. He says, we must obey God rather than men. He became a strong, faithful person. And after they flogged him, they went on their way, it says in the text, rejoicing, considering themselves worthy to be suffered for the name of Christ. See, Peter humbled himself, said, I'll take your beatings, Lord. And then the Lord wasn't done with him. We see in Acts chapter 10 that he goes to Cornelius' house and he gets to open the door of the kingdom to Gentiles, a thing that was just boggled people's mind. And Cornelius, when he came to him, he fell down at Peter's feet and worshiped him. Peter learned this lesson, though. He said, get up, because I'm just a man. You don't worship me. You worship Jesus Christ. You worship God. But the Lord graced him in chapter 12. He's called into this house where this lady named Tabitha is dead. How do you raise a dead man? What are you going to do? But God graced him and gave him the power to raise someone even from the dead. See, Peter learned this lesson. God's opposed to the proud. He'll work against you and bring you down because growth is awkward. It's ugly. But those are the rare opportunities in our life that we can rebuild ourselves, be born again, and start afresh and reconnect with God. It's those rare moments where you face life and death that you humble yourself and you cry to your Lord because you know the power is not within you. And that's when God will raise you up. And that's what happens here, as we see in this text three times. A lot of people say, well, the Lord knows that I love him. No, he doesn't. No, you don't. Because if you loved him, you would obey him. That's just easy, isn't it? And this is so helpful that in my younger years when I decided, do I want to go to service this morning or not? We all have struggled with that, haven't we? Let's be honest. And really the bottom line, the reason I don't want to go is because I'm honoring myself more than the Lord. Because I want to stay in bed, or I want to do something different, and it's more about me, and it's pride issue, isn't it? And if we understand that when we choose to stay away, we're saying to the Lord, I'm more important than you. Now, I say this to you, you're all here, so we're talking to the choir. But that same principle applies to everything the Lord asks us to do. I do it willingly because he knows all things. And I'm going to submit because I love him. More than anything, do you love Jesus? I didn't ask you believe in him. I didn't ask if you trust him. Do you love him for what he did for you, that it has humbled you so much out of gratitude, no matter what he asks? I'm there for you, Lord. I'll serve others as you have served me. I know there's people, I've had a wife tell me that I cannot confront my husband's pornography because I don't want to blow up our relationship. That woman loves her husband more than she loves the Lord. And actually, she loves her husband not enough because if she understood that his soul is at stake, she would love him enough to expose it, wouldn't she? See, everything in life is a matter of passion. Who we have the passion for, is it life on this earth, ourselves, or is it for Jesus Christ? Let me end with this amazing incident happened 2 weeks ago, Saturday, January 13th. You probably heard about that false alarm in Hawaii. it was incredible because they woke up on their cell phone with messages like this. Emergency alert. You know the beep that comes across your radio or the TV? This is a test. In the case of a real emergency, you had been directed to where to go. This is what it said. Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. If this did not wake you up and put fear into you, I don't know what would. And so when you wake up on your cell phone, this is what pictures of people's actual cell phones. It was on the TV. It was on the radio. This is not a drill. Seek immediate shelter. Missile inbound. Now, if it's coming, how much time do you have? Now, yes, it was a false alarm. But for the people in Hawaii, did they believe it to be true? Their life is over as they know it. If they cannot get away or find some type of protection. And so I was most interested in how they responded to this event. What was going through their minds? What were they thinking of? This is that rare moment. It's awkward. It's terrible. Where you get to look at the bigger picture of life, what's important, and who should I love most? And so people were running for shelter. They're running on the streets. They were hiding their kids in sewer man covers in the sewers because that's the only place they could find that they would think would protect them from the blast. One representative said, well, he was hiding with his children in the bathtub saying prayers. Because where are you going to go to save your life from an inbound missile? And if it's nuclear, will those places help you at all? Of course not. And so the governor said, this is totally unacceptable. Yeah. But here are some of the statements. I read many of them, but I'll just give you a few. It seemed like a lifetime and a blur, those 38 minutes. I thought about never being able to see anyone in my family again, ever. I choked back the flood of emotions that entered my mind and refused to respond with anything resembling a goodbye. They just couldn't bring themselves to goodbye. They were talking on a cell phone. I didn't let my mind go there. That's scary. Even in the darkest of hours, because they understood they were going to die, they couldn't tell someone goodbye. They couldn't bring themselves to do it. But was it goodbye? As far as they knew? Absolutely. We finally fully felt like we were going to die. I drove to try to get my kids, even though I knew I probably wouldn't make it. This is a mother trying to find her kids. And I finally was fully visualizing what was happening while I was on the road. It was awful. And one lady said, or a person, this can't be real. This can't be real. See, emotionally, they believed the message as true, so they all thought they were going to die. Now, afterwards, there were feelings of relief, but they were also of anger. Can you imagine the anger? It was just someone pushed the wrong button. I'd be most curious, though, and this is why I'm bringing it up, has this changed anyone's life? Because they faced death right then, didn't they? And they were literally given a second chance. Did it change their life and their perspective about what is important and what to chase after? Did it make them think about heaven or hell or life after death in the least? Or was this just an event that just is on the calendar and they just keep moving on? Peter had one of those moments when he denied Christ and the cock crowed. And he looked at Jesus, and Jesus looked at him, and he knew he was a broken man. It's a rare opportunity when things happen in your life to reduce you to nothing so that you can look up rather than look down and say, Jesus saved me. And it's only what we do with those moments which will determine the rest of our life on this earth. God is opposed to the proud. He will actually work against them to bring them low. But he gives grace to the humble. Let's always have a heart of humility that whatever the Lord says, we're just willing at a moment to do what? Without hesitation, whatever he says not to do, we flee from, and whatever he says to do, we run to. Let's not rely on our own strength. But may our prayers always be, Lord, by your grace and by your strength, I'll be faithful. And we have that attitude when we see Jesus come in the clouds or we face our own death on this earth. We'll have all the hope in the world because we know it does not rely on ourselves, but he will be the one taking us home to be in heaven. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?